Thank you, because you're on time. Can you work out somebody that you want to work with for the next 10 minutes? So I want you to pair up, and one of you go and get an envelope from behind that wall. So you guys are going to work together. You grab an envelope and come back, and don't open it. Don't open it. Let me pray for a moment. Thank you, Father, that you've gathered us again. Thank you that we'll have good fun together tonight. I pray that we will be amazed by you and amazed by the genius of your word and the loveliness of Jesus once again. Amen. Now, I'm going to tell you what we're going to do. Then you're going to go and run amok. And then the chaos will be uncontrollable. And then I'll try and sweep up afterwards. Okay, here we go. You're in a pair. You've got an envelope with 24 cards. However, some of you have 25 or 23 because there were some incomplete sets and they were all printed good, okay? So, what you're going to do is you're going to go off and find a corner of the floor somewhere. You'll need a floor. It won't work on the chairs. And you'll accidentally drop them all. Oh no, they're in the wrong order. No, they're already in the wrong order. And then you'll spread them out in four rows of six. And six across, four deep. And they'll all be in the wrong order. What you're going to do, so here we go, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 across, 24 cards, and you're going to put them in order that they happened in the universe. So not necessarily the order in the Bible, because the Bible books are assembled not in exact chronological order, but the order that they happened in. So the creation is probably going to be first. Excellent. Now, as you're working, you'll get with your partner and say, no, 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 and then you'll start fighting and wrestling on the floor. We'll break you up. And then you work out what you think it is. Don't start yet. Don't start wrestling yet. As you come on some cards, you'll be puzzled because this one says, the fall. Now, most of you will guess, well, the fall is when Adam and Eve ate the fruit. But there'll be one called anarchy. Anarchy. And you go, what's anarchy? And I'll explain, that's the time of the judges, where there was no king in Israel. There was anarchy. Went for several hundred years. So every now and then, as you're milling around, sorting, fighting, playing, whatever it is, someone will say, what's this? And I'll yell, and none of you will listen. But if you don't listen, you won't find out that anarchy is the time of the judges. Ah! And then you sort it around. Now, there'll be no exam at the end because you don't need an exam. But it'll give you an impression of which bits of the Bible and the universe that you're pretty good on your timeline and which bits are kind of foggy. And then we'll go through the timeline as they happen in the world on the poster here, hidden behind the secret panels. And okay, now I want to get this done in less than 10 minutes, like maybe 5. Okay. So you ready?
Ready?
Set, go. Let me help you a little. I'm going to save you some pain. Are you ready? There's a picture of a golden calf. However, this is an era of Israeli history. It's not the event of the golden calf at Mount Sinai. This is 400 years of idolatry. When did the 400 years of idolatry happen? Okay? I'm going to go through, keep watching. These are the tricky ones, you ready? Anarchy, where there's a crown and a cross through it, means the time of the judges. Nearly 400 years where there was no king. Slavery is the time in Egypt, 430 years they were in Egypt, finished in slavery. Keep listening. Resurrection, new creation. Folly will confuse you. Where in the Bible is folly talked about? There's books about wisdom and folly, right? The flood, you know, the great flood. Silence. Silence is an era in the Bible. There's a 400 and something year period in the Bible where there's no Bible. There's no revelation. 400 years of nothing. And watch this. There are four heads on one picture called the patriarchs. Patriarchs. The four heads are Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. The patriarchs. Ah, okay. The last days. Now, here's a trick one. The judgment. See the judgment? You might think that's in Genesis 3 or something, but if you look, there are sheep and goats on it. Ah. The fall. The promise. I wonder what the promise is. There's a snake biting a heel and a leather tunic. The prophets, the kings, the cross, Jesus, the resurrection, the church, Exodus. The exile. The exile is when the Israelite nation spent about 70 years out of the country in Babylon as punishment. Here's a tricky one. Watch this. The remnant. The remnant is the picture of the trowel and the torn off cloth. That's the time when the tiny remnant of the people came back from Babylon and were restored to the land that they had lost in Israel. The remnant is a time period where God brought his people back from Babylon. Here's what you do now. You stand up, leave it there, and come back to your seat. Just leave it there. So, okay. Now we're going to whiz through the entire Bible before we're done. And these are the big eras of Bible time. The short version of the Bible, remember? Once upon a time, they lived happily ever after. That's it. Starts with the babies, ends with the wedding. So, the babies are going to be over here. The Adam and Eve story in the garden. And the second time we get to a garden, which is also a city, is going to be over here. Once upon a time. Jack, can you do the climbing for me? Once upon the time, only once in the time, was the creation. In the beginning, God made heaven and earth. What's that? You've got to peel upwards. And Jack's having to do the impossible. It's too high, and he's got to not pull the poster down. It's going to be tricky. Now, the creation story, Genesis 1 and 2, is spectacular. It's poetry. It's very sophisticated poetry in Hebrew. And God speaks reality into being out of his mind, out of his word. And he speaks a reality, a universe, infinite in spectrums of colour and infinite in electromagnetics and physics and biology and just every palette of everything that you could ever imagine. He fills it all. He doesn't just put fish in the sea. He makes the sea teeming with fish. He doesn't just make things that are still and sits them on the shelf. In fact, every single thing he makes is moving. It's got atoms with electrons and protons going around at a million miles an hour. And ecosystems doing this, and biology doing this, and stars doing this, and galaxies doing this. Everything is dancing. Everything God makes dances. It's one of his joys because it's his true nature. The Father and the Son and the Spirit dance. They thought of it. He creates the world 7 days, and then he gives the whole lot away as a gift to his children. The entire universe, he gives it away. And there's a bequest at the end of the thing. He makes them regents, kings over all the earth. Rule the birds, fish in the sea. He gives them, and then it talks in Genesis 2 about he gives them language. He gives them the power to name, to have a responsibility and authority over things. He fills the land with onyx and gold, water that's coming. The four rivers in Genesis 2 are driven by springs. They just never cease. They flow in the four directions. The land is rich. He gives Adam, Eve, and we have the first poem in the Bible. No, the whole thing's a poem, but the explicit poem, which is that when Adam sees Eve, this is the loose translation. It's from Australian. Hurly burly, what a girly. But he says, wow, bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. And So we have this scene where in Genesis 5 verse 1 to 3 it says that Adam and Eve were God's children. You didn't know that, did you? Sounds like heresy. Check the genealogy in Luke. It goes through all the names and ends up the son of Seth, the son of Adam, the son of God. That's a little uncomfortable, isn't it? It's the babies. They're born, Adam and Eve. They get the whole farm. What's it called here? A station. No, that's Australian. The ranch. God gives them the whole ranch. I've got to translate. Somebody said that they'd tried to listen to the video from last week, and they said we needed someone to translate from Australian. So,
get the whole sentence.
God creates everything. It's all dancing, and he says, here, kids, it's yours. It's yours. It's all yours. Oh, by the way, I'm going to make it all very rich. So we have the creation. Now, during the creation story, we get a... I'm trying to think how to approach this. There's a story about fruit and trees. There's a lot of news in Genesis 2 about trees and fruit and what it looks like and what it tastes like and how many there are and all the water that's making them grow. And God planted a garden. He planted an ornamental garden. It's a paradise. The borrow word from some Sumerian language is paradise. It only occurs 3 times in the Bible. He created a paradise. It's a private garden. It's just for the family. It's only for you and your family to have the barbecue in the cool of the eve. And God would walk, Yahweh would walk with them in the cool of the eve with his kids, with his family. Now, in comes the slithering creature, which God totally lets into the garden. He knows completely what he's doing. The slithering creature was not a snake, it was a serpent, which means it had legs. And part of the curse was that it lost its legs and would have to slither and eat dust forever. The serpent comes in and he installs a genius piece of software which all of you are running right now, every day, all the time. It's a complete genius piece of software. And I'm going to do a little couple of demonstrations about how deeply it is in your brain. I'm going to tell a way of telling the story of the Bible. Are you ready? God created heaven and earth. He created it beautiful and magnificent. He filled it with teeming life. And he created Adam and Eve, the seventh day of creation, and gave it to all of them as a gift. God put a tree in the middle of the garden, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and said, do not touch it. Do not eat of it. He didn't say don't touch it. Do not eat of it. If you eat of this, you'll surely die. You know what happened? Snake moves in, Adam and Eve eat the tree, they die. They become subject to death. But now I'll do a high speed maneuver here. God is a king, God's law has been broken, God had a law, God's law has been broken, there must be a punishment paid, a king cannot have a kingdom without his law being upheld, and God has to deliver punishment against these fallen creatures. Nevertheless, his super compression, he sends Moses, he sends the sacrifice system, and then he finally sends Jesus. Jesus dies on the cross, pays for our sin, deals with our debt, our law breaking that happened in the garden because we ate of the tree. He deals with that. Now, this is, there's the theological word, imputed to us. His life is imputed to us, our sins are imputed to him. So now, when God looks at us, he sees Jesus. Jesus stands between us and God, and Jesus deals with the wrath of God against us. He is the mediator that deals with that. And then we get to be filled with the Spirit, we get to be part of the kingdom, and then we go home and live happily ever after. Okay. What I just told you is a satanic twist on the gospel. Why didn't you pick it? How come you're letting me teach this stuff in a church and nobody stopped me? Answer, because we've got this software running in our heads all the time. Let me show you the trick. God created the world, made all this stuff, but God had a tree in the middle of the garden. He said, you mustn't touch it or you'll surely die. We ate of the tree. God has a law. God's law is broken. And punishment must be paid. Whoop, I did it again. Did you pick it?
Well, he didn't say you couldn't touch it. He said you couldn't eat it.
It's true. That was an error on my part just now. Yes, yes. Genesis 2, God planted a garden and gave the garden to man. And in the middle of the garden, he planted a tree called the tree of life. Yes? Look it up. Also, he planted the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now you think, architectural garden. What do you put in the middle of an architectural garden? You put the greatest feature, right? The tree is the tree of life. Whatever you're really into, whatever you want to honour, you put in the middle of the garden. When we tell the gospel, we usually put the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the middle of the garden. We forget the first tree because that's the software that Satan put in the woman's head. He gets Eve talking about one tree, the singular tree. And the tree of life, which is planted in the middle of the garden, is forgotten because Satan bamboozles Eve into that. And she makes seven errors when she replies to the serpent. His trick is to ask a rhetorical question. Did God really, blah, 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 blah? Do you really think God is that trustworthy? Do you really think, did God, are you serious that God anything? So he puts this question mark in our heads and we go, I don't know about God. I wonder what's God like. I think he's good. I think he's loving. I think he's, I don't feel it. And we have the question burring around. And so what happens is that we construct garbage, which is what Eve did. So she told us, so she replies to the serpent, with all this junk. She changes God's name. She changes the geography of the garden. She changes the, takes out the words that are all in Genesis 2, that it was beautiful, beautiful fruit, abundant tree. She removes all of the good words. And she starts talking about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil being the tree that is the center of God's architecture, the center of God's will. So she becomes a legalist. And when God confronts her later, he says, what have you done this thing? She says, the serpent caused me to forget. And I ate. That's the Hebrew literal. He caused me to forget. He puts the question in our head. We start burring around. And we forget that the center of God's garden is the tree of life. We then start to think that the tree of the knowledge of good and evil was a test. Now, where do we get that from? God put the thing there to test us, to see if we would trust him or not and obey him or not, see if we would keep his law. Where do we get theology like that from? Satan. But do you, as a parent, though you are evil, set up tests around your house to see if your children will fall? God doesn't. Why do you think he would? Because we've got this software burning around, ruining our lives, ruining our thinking. God, I'm going to totally do this unjustly because I've got to get through the rest of it. I'm really camping right at the front because almost all of our theology gets screwed up in the garden. It's all screwed up in the garden. The garden software infects every piece of theology we ever do. God had two trees. Neither of them were there for a test. They're both evidence. If I said, here's a tree of life and here's a tree of death, what do you think? He's giving me a choice. When they come into the land of Israel, God says, here's Mount Ebal, here's Mount Gerizim, here's the way of blessing, here's the way of cursing. Which would you like to choose? So he's saying with the two trees, my purpose for you is life and life and life and life eternal. And with the second tree, I will never hold you here as a captive. You will never be here as my prisoner. You can always leave. I promise you, if you eat of that tree, it is poison. It will kill you. Please, kids, don't touch the fireplace. But I will never keep you as slaves. You are always free. I will never lock you in this house. My purpose for you is life and life and life, and you are always free, and I will honour your decision. Test. Okay. Scoot forward. Here we go. So that was the fall. Can you do the fall? I was supposed to hold that up. So we bombed out pretty badly. We didn't. Now, the other thing about the thing is that we think about it. God was a king. God made a law. We think of the tree, the second tree, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, as if it was a law. As if God gives a hoot about law and making rules that people will obey. That's satanic theology, that we think that's God's primary intention. It's like the center of God's garden is this tree of knowledge of good and evil. He's really into making rules and see if we'll follow them. So when we took the fruit, we broke the law. That's nothing. I mean, that's massive. That's enough to die over. But we broke God's heart. We broke faith. We broke trust. We ripped off our dad. We betrayed the one who gave us the universe as a gift, who gave us authority over all things, who gave us the power to name, who gave Adam to Eve and Eve to Adam, and we spat in his face.
We didn't, they did.
Mea culpa.
We didn't, she made me do it.
Got it! That's it, that's the question. You have the wrong answer, that's the right answer. If it wasn't for Eve, now here we go. No. We're all the same. And we've got a problem with breaking the law, yeah, but God's not concerned about that. Compared to the fact that God's left in the place of saying, but I thought that we have stabbed him in the guts, and then we hide, and when he says, what have you done? Adam bravely steps forward and says, she did it. And that's never happened in your marriage, has it? No. And so our problem is not just that we've broken the law, that we've got a legal problem, that we've got a moral problem, we've got a nature problem. We've become reptilian, we've become rodent, we've become subhuman. And our nature, we are by nature objects of wrath, the New Testament says. Yeah. Because that's exactly the suspicion software that Satan puts in our head. Here's a bold statement. You know all the questions of apologetics? How can God let suffering happen? How come good things happen to good, bad people and blah, blah, blah? Why is there evil in the world? Why did God let the snake in the garden? Why do I have to die of cancer? Why did my mum this, that, that? All apologetics questions come back to there's something satanic about God and I can smell it and I can't quite articulate it yet. How can a good God allow this to happen? Implies that God is in the dock and we're on the prosecution and we need a good answer. And if he can't come up with anything, we'll crucify him. And guess what?
We did.
And I'm going to accelerate a little bit. Here we go. So we're doomed. We are absolutely doomed. Our nature has fallen. Our character has fallen. We've forfeited the tree. We've forfeited life itself. We've said to God, beep, I edited that. And he says, right, you guys. He designs very clever punishments. He curses the snake and he curses the earth. But he doesn't curse Adam or Eve. And Adam's source was the ground. And so his relationship with the ground is broken. Eve's source was Adam. So her relationship with Adam is broken. And that's how the fall works out in the two ways. And then God said, I vow that the war that has begun today between Satan and this woman will end when a child of her crushes the head of a child of him. He will strike the heel of the child of the woman, but the child of the woman will crush his skull. This is going to happen, I vow it. I am going to save these people. I'm going to save my children. I'm going to find a way. And then he kills an animal, strips its skin, and makes garments for them because they're so covered in shame and fig leaves. He says, I will cover your shame. I'm going to spill blood and it's going to cost. And I'm going to make this as a picture of what's going to happen. I'm going to find a way to cover your shame. So is set up the division between the sons of Satan and the sons of the woman. The line of Seth, the bloodline of Seth, which is the story of the Bible to Jesus. It's about the bloodline of Seth. And the bloodline of the serpent, which is Lamech, Cain, Lamech, the Amalekites, Pharaoh, Haman, everybody that's against the Jews all of the way through the scriptures. There are bloodlines, there are races that run through all of the scriptures as the enemies of God, trying to wipe out the bloodline. If you can wipe out the bloodline, the Messiah will not be born.